Hey guys, welcome back. This is James, the Lowered HMFIC, and I want to say thanks. I really appreciate you guys being patient with me while I try and get this new project off the ground. I would like to get more of these out at a more regular clip. Right now I'm shooting for one a month, and that seems hopefully doable. I've got some really cool stuff coming up I think you guys are going to dig, but it's going to take me some time to put those together. So I thought I'd try a solo episode. I've got a few clips. It is going to be short, basically just talking about some shit that's on my mind. Hope you guys find it interesting. And as always, I really appreciate all the support. You guys mean a lot to me, and I want to make sure I'm doing a good job. I know I'm not right now, but I will get better. I hope you stick with me. Thanks. And I hope you enjoy it. All right, so just to be ahead of things, in this next segment, I say Taycan in reference to the Porsche Macan. Yeah, it's my fault. I got them mixed up. But Porsche has two vehicles at the same time in their own lineup that have very similar names. So I feel like they own a little bit of that too. Whatever. I definitely am one of those guys that, you know, you hear somebody like myself trip up on the radio and you're like, nah, you got it wrong. So I thought I'd just put this up front. I meant Macan, not Taycan. It is what it is. Hope you guys enjoy the segment. Hey guys, I thought I'd jump on and talk about a few things that I've been thinking about and an experience I had. And first I want to talk about this kind of experience I had and some thoughts I had on it. But basically what's going on is I was on my way home from Cars and Coffee, like everything's cool, just cruising in the galaxy, had all my windows down, and then out of nowhere this Hummer appears. Brand new Hummer. Now I've seen a couple of these guys around. I happen to live in an area that I don't know how I snuck in here, but I'm afraid if they find out someday they won't let me live here anymore. It's a pretty weird like pocket in Northern California, but it full of pretty affluent folks. So it's crazy how fast you can see like the newest whatever driving around, which obviously is pretty cool for me. For instance, I was at a Cars and Coffee a while back, before I thought the GT350 had come out, the Heritage Edition that Ford launched a while back. And I was talking to a buddy of mine. I was like, man, like I'm not a big Mustang guy, but I really like the idea of this Heritage Edition because they're using the Wimbledon white paint code and they're, you know, the blue stripes, like it's all their original colors. And I don't know. I just thought that was cool. And I was talking about how, man, I'll probably never see any of these because they're, you know, it's a limited edition type thing. And my understanding was you had to like, I don't think too many dealerships actually got them. I think you had to order one. Anyway, so as I'm expressing this, like he taps me on the shoulder and he's like, that's one right there, isn't it? And sure shit, like two cars down, there was one sitting there. And it was really cool because like right next to that was, you know, an original GT350, like 67. Both Wimbledon white, both blue rally stripes, you know, and I'm tripping out on that thinking, man, obviously just talking about that. And he taps me on the shoulder again. He's like, isn't that another one over there? And there was two at this show within, 20, 30 feet of each other. But that's the kind of place it is up here. You know, the new stuff, whatever's new, like whatever's the hot new joint, like people jump on it pretty quick. Anyway, so along those lines, I've seen a bunch of the new electric Hummers already. Weirdly, every one that I've seen has been white. And I know they're not all the same one. I'm not like seeing the same one over and over again because I saw two, one behind another, you know, coming the other direction. And this other one that I saw today had some stickers on it. And anyway, so what tripped me out about it was I couldn't believe how quiet it was. And I mean, granted, I'm in the galaxy, you know, it's not the quietest car, but I did have my windows down and I can generally tell, or, you know, I hear even like a Tesla coming up on me. There's some kind of wind noise. You hear it come on. You hear it, sometimes you'll hear it come down on like regen if they have that turned on. But I didn't hear any of that. This thing just like appeared next to me. What really sent that like to the next level was it has really aggressive looking all-terrain tires on it. And as a kid that grew up in Northern California, I'm real familiar with what mudders sound like going down the freeway. And I don't know who is in charge of designing these all-terrains, but they killed it, because I don't know that there's a quieter set of all-terrains on the market, if that's, you know, the kind of thing you're looking for. Another thing, when I got home, I was thinking about the Hummer. Like, going over in my mind how quiet it was, and I was next to it, you know, for about two lights. And I did hear it come down on regen, I assume. It did make another weird, like, kind of like a solenoid popping sound at one point as we were driving next to each other, and I have no idea what that was. But all in all, it was a ghost. And that really got me thinking about another experience I had with a Tesla. I was, you know, in a parking lot, and I was trying to take a picture of a car that was in there. And this Tesla, I basically almost ran me over. And I never heard it. And they would have got me if somebody hadn't been there with me to, like, let me know, like, whoa, hey, watch out. And I looked over, and, you know, Tesla was, like, right on top of me. So I know that the Porsche, I think it's the Macan, has a built-in like sound that they pipe out. And I believe that you can choose from like one of maybe three different sounds. There's quite a few of them up here, and I've only heard the Jetson-y sound. So I don't know if that's just like the coolest sound that's available, or that's the only sound there is, but I feel like I read there was options. Doesn't matter. The point is, I'd be surprised if that's not something that's mandated soon, especially with like the Rivians are out now, the Lightning truck is out now. With all these larger, you know, SUV style electrics, there's chances of them not running over somebody's kid with as quiet as they are. You know, it's not good. I definitely wouldn't take those odds. It's definitely going to happen. So I don't know, like, what sound would you want to come out of an electric car? I mean, I think Porsche's got it right, not only with the style of their car, but, you know, the sound, that Jetson-y kind of vehicle sound is on brand for them. But, like, I don't know what sound I'd want my Hummer to make if I had one, or my Rivian, or, you know, whatever. Obviously, it would be brand specific, but I don't know. So that was something I was kicking around. And I'd be interested to see what you guys have to say about that. Another thing that came out recently, which I think I might have seen one going down the road the other day, but I'm not. I definitely saw a Raptor, but it wasn't an R. I saw the current model 3.5. There's quite a few of those up here. But anyway, the Raptor R. And a couple of guys have reached out to me already asking me what I think about them. And I don't know. I gotta say, I'm not really thinking about them at all. Do I think it's cool that they brought the V8 back? Sure. I mean, it's the 5.2 supercharged from the Shelby GT500, which is kind of cool. I mean, that's 700 horse. It's 640 pound foot of torque. The new grille is pretty cool. So I like some of the style changes that they made. I think the hood is a little aggressive, but it starts at $107,350. And then I think there's a delivery charge on top of that. It's like $1,700 or $1,800. And man, that seems like a lot. I don't know if I could justify dropping that kind of cheddar on a truck, especially something that I'm more than likely going to be parking outside. No, it doesn't mean it's not cool. And if I was won the lotto or something, I mean, I could definitely see picking something like that up, but I mean, trucks are getting so damn expensive. I don't know. I kind of wonder if we're getting to some kind of bubble on this. obviously it's meant to compete with the Dodge, the TRX. And when I took a look into that, I believe I was looking at the Car and Driver, was the one, the article that I found. And I kind of liked it, the article, because they talked about the difference in power to weight. The Raptor R, I think, is like 800 pounds lighter than the TRX. And so that puts like the Raptor is like 8.6 pounds per horsepower to the TRX was like 9.7. So it's not like a huge difference. But Ford's always been really good about punching above their weight. I mean, if you look back at any of their cars, you know, performance stuff, you know, especially the Lightning is probably the easiest example. I mean, Chevy had the 454 Super Sport out for a while, and, you know, they were the only game in town. Lightning shows up with their F-150. Instead of the 454, they had a 351 Windsor derivative in it, and smoked their ass. I mean, the Lightning was faster 0-60, you know, I think they said it handled better, it had better braking, like all around, just, you know, a better performing truck. I mean, say what you want style-wise. Obviously, there are Ford guys, there are Chevy guys, and I mean, I don't, I get it, but that's just not me. Like, I'd be perfectly happy with the Lightning. I'd be perfectly happy with the Chevy. I've always had Chevy or GM derived trucks personally, but I don't know if that. It's not something I really went out of my way for. It's just kind of the way things worked out. That was all I had on my mind about trucks. I mean, it's obviously they're not a lowered vehicle, so it's not really something I spent a lot of time on. But they are cool, and I like seeing them around. So if you're thinking of getting one, I don't know why you'd wait on my blessing, but I guess go for it if you can swing it. The last thing I wanted to talk about were, I mean, I'm sure everybody's heard about it by now, but it's been, you know, all over the different podcasts and all the different car magazines, or everybody's talking about it, BMW. So apparently BMW is already doing this in the United Kingdom, and it basically they're charging a subscription, you know, just like an app or something, to have use of options on a vehicle that you are technically already paying for. That's insane. I can't imagine how anybody could be talked into this bullshittery. And I genuinely hope that if BMW tries to bring this shit to the States, that nobody buys them. And I mean, I like BMWs as much as the next guy. But I was right off the bat, I was thinking, man, if people keep buying BMWs and BMW does this, there's no way that the other car manufacturers aren't going to see this, you know, and want to leave that money on the table, especially when it's something, it just doesn't make any sense to me how they could justify this. Now, I've read a few different articles on it trying to get a better feel, and it sounds like BMW is positioning it that they're going to lower the price of the car, you know, for the buyer, and then the way that they'll supplement that immediate loss of income is by charging for these subscriptions over time. Now, I believe there was already a rumor about them charging for like radio options, like if you wanted access to, you know, Android or Apple CarPlay, you know, or special options like that, they charge you a subscription. That alone, I was like, no, I wouldn't. That alone would be enough to stop me from buying a BMW. But now they're talking, they're actually doing it. Like I said, in the United Kingdom, they're charging, I guess, £10 per month, which I looked it up, and I guess today that's $12.03 for use of heated seats, which is a physical thing that exists in a vehicle that I'm assuming you didn't steal. I mean, if you walked into a dealership and paid for something, you know, you pay for this BMW and the feature is in there, that shit's yours, right? you should be able to use it. I mean, I'm not, I just can't wrap my mind around how a customer could be bilked into this. So first, like I said, BMW is stating they're going to lower the initial cost. You know, if they're thinking that they're going to be making $10 a month and only when it's cold outside, I'm not sure how much of a discount you're really going to be able to get out of them for that. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. And it sounds like Subaru, I was like, there's no way, you know, this, you know, anybody else is doing this, but it sounds like Subaru is already doing this, in regards to a remote start of all things, which that's another physical thing that's in the car. It's not some added software or, you know, it's not like a Tesla where, you know, they're pushing out something and there's these additional features that hadn't existed before. And if you want these new features, they're going to charge you X amount, you know, whatever per month. This is like this is physical hardware that is built into the vehicle already that you paid for, and they want to make you pay a monthly fee on top of your normal car payment to use these additional features that you're paying the fuel to lug around. I don't know. I can't say that I'm surprised, especially with the big push that we're getting towards electric. This kind of thing has been at the back of my mind. I think we may be headed towards, you know, our relationship to cars is going to be a lot different in 10 years than, you know, what it has been for the last 50. If this kind of thing takes hold, I sincerely hope that it doesn't. Anyway, so those are the three things that I was thinking about. Not sure if it's something that BMW could successfully roll out to the US, but if people in the UK are dumb enough, you know, obviously I can't imagine that people here won't be, especially Subaru of all companies. That really shocked me. BMW, you know, if any company was going to pull some shit like this, I would expect it from, you know, BMW or, you know, maybe one of the new guys like Kia. But I don't know. That's just, it's a trip. Hopefully people don't do it and it goes away. But if people pay it, you know, the other car companies will see that and they'll definitely take advantage. But anyway, let me know what you guys think. Would you pay a subscription for something that was already in your car? If you buy one of these BMWs and they want to charge you $10 per, you know, month that you're using this feature that is physically in your vehicle, can you send them a bill for the fuel consumption that, you know, that the extra weight is causing you? I don't know. How does that work? So, yeah, let me know what you think. Have a good one, guys. Hey, guys, it's me, James, the Lowered HMFIC, and I thought I would try something different out. I'm going to do a few, well, I don't know how many of these I'll do or if it's something I'll continue, but I guess you guys will let me know if you like it or not. Basically, I read an article in Top Gear I thought was kind of interesting, and it was an interview with Volvo Polestar CEO Thomas, and I'm going to butcher this last name. I'm not sure how he pronounces it, but Ingenlath or Ingenlath. Basically, Thomas is the CEO and head designer of Volvo Polestar. He's a former Volvo Volkswagen group designer, so it's definitely, the guy's got some chops. But in this article, which was, it's kind of truncated, but I kind of wish that they would have gone in more depth so we could really understand what he was looking at or what he was exactly talking about, mark-wise. But he says, it's been and still is a phase where there's an amazing overemphasis of expressiveness. And right off, like, I kind of love that. It really takes me back to my art school days, like the real hardcore designer types. They're so fucking dramatic. Everything is, you know, it's either amazing or it's just absolute garbage. There doesn't seem to be any in between. But he goes on and he says, you walk through a street where lots of cars are parked and all of them are shouting at you. It's very arrogant attitude to actually molest people with these expressions. You feel like, come on, have a certain decency. Some class would be appropriate. I think that's amazing. That's such a fantastic point of view. The first thing that popped into my mind was like, you know, picturing him laid out on a therapist, like the chaise lounge. And he's like, you know, therapist holding up a little toy and being like, show me on the Hot Wheel where the aggressively styled card touched you. But it really got me thinking. And so I went back and pulled up some of images and, you know, to see, you know, I'm more of a classic car guy, but I try and keep on top of what new stuff is doing. And so I went back to really look at, you know, the Volvo and Polestar lineup, and they're separate lineups. Polestar used to be kind of like Shelby to Mustang or Saline to Mustang. But now it seems like they're separate brands. Anyway, the Volvo styling I think is decent. I think it's pretty good. It's definitely better than it was when I was a kid. You know, it's although the square Volvos are definitely growing on me in my old age, but the new stuff is, it's got a elegance to it, and it's definitely more refined. I don't want to say boring. It's not boring, but it looks like what it is. It's a upscale, clean lines, you know, two box. The sedans do have kind of decent dog houses. There are A pillars, B pillars, and C pillars all have kind of a nice flow to them, but they don't feel dramatic or, you know, when one pulls up, you're not going to be like, oh shit, you know, it's just like, oh, that's nice. You know, it's all right. Which is funny because he definitely seems like an either or kind of guy. And I really wish they would have nailed him down to like specific cars he was looking at on this street. Anyway, I just thought it was a really funny article, and, it was an interesting point of view. And, let me know if you find this at all interesting, or if I'm boring the shit out of you, or if you have other articles or things you want me to look at. You can always hit me up on my Facebook, The Lowered, or you can hit me up on my Instagram, The Lowered HMFIC, or you can even go to my website, which is not working particularly well as anything other than a place where I post longer format blogs. But I try and respond personally to everything I get. So anyway, I may record a few more of these, or I might start mixing them in with my other interviews, and I hope to have some really good ones coming up that I think you guys are going to dig. All right, hope you guys are doing good. Hey guys, let's talk about Dodge's Woodward rollout. I'm going to cover all 3 days. I wanted to sit a little bit with it and kind of think about the different announcements and how they hit me. And like, you know, first time you hear something, you have that knee jerk reaction, or like, you know, Chappelle says, the whole elephant analogy of, you know, if you stand too close to an elephant, you can't see what it is. You just see the, you know, the wrinkly skin, and the further back you go, the more likely you are to see the entire picture. So I wanted to wait a few days to kind of think about the entire picture and how things work out. This is my first time seeing or hearing Tim Kuniski's talk. He's the brand chief of an executive offer of Stellantis, which is the, you know, the umbrella that Dodge now falls under in Alfa's ownership, which I was really pretty stoked to. I think he's a decent presenter. He definitely has passion for the brand. And I was interested enough that I went back and looked at his resume, which I'm going to touch on more later. But it seems like the guy's mostly been through different sections of Dodge and Alpha for the majority of his career, which I think is a great thing. And it really puts him in probably the best position to be the guy to walk Dodge through the transition from internal combustion engine to gas, which they very clearly are doing. So we'll go ahead and start with day one, which I think was probably my favorite of the three. So he starts, I already posted the videos, and if you've watched them, then cool. But if not, so he starts off with the body in white, and well, both body in white. So start off with a basically a made to order drag car. It looks like it's, or he said it was NHRA qualified for 7.53 second pass. So that's like the body, the cage, the suspension. It kind of sounded like he was alluding to you can choose from a set of motors that they offer, but it didn't sound like it wasn't super clear. Like, does it come with a motor already installed, or do you get the body and then you choose the motor after? Not that it matters. I mean, it's not something that I would do or I could do, but I think it's pretty cool, and I'm stoked. It seems like something, you know, all of the big three are doing. I like watching the race series. I like reading about the cars. Seeing the kind of ultimate drag version of all three, you know, pony or GT cars, however you want to refer to them, I think is pretty cool. So even though it's not something I personally would pursue, you know, it is something that draws me to the brand. So it's doing its job. The actual body in white, which is just literally a body. And it was surprising that you could pick it. He said it was going to be available under $8,000. Now, again, that's just the body. So it looked like it was from the firewall back, the front chassis section, and it did have front fenders and hood on it, but no electrical, no interior, no engine, no trans, no suspension. Basically the perfect starting point if you wanted to build a race car or, you know, something insanely custom. The second I saw it, the first thing I thought was, you know, perfect for guys that are building drift cars, perfect for guys that are building drag cars that, you know, maybe didn't fall under that 7.53 second, you know, of the first body. Or, you know, if you just wanted to piece one together. And if I'm being honest, it probably wouldn't be a bad way to go. When you think about it, you buy a brand new body in white, although he said that you could order it any color you wanted, you know, within their offerings, but put that sucker in your garage. And then as you can afford it, you know, you go by your local recyclers, and let's face it, there's a lot of Dodge Challengers and Chargers in the recycling, recyclers. You know, you could pick the motor that you want. You could buy the suspension components as you could afford them and put them in. You could choose the interior that you want. And if you, I mean, I don't know how, it really makes me wonder what it would be cost-wise over time to piece together, you know, your ultimate Charger or Challenger. But I mean, it seemed like a kind of interesting way to look at it, or an interesting idea. So, I mean, and there's guys that are doing this now with the other bodies. That they're remanufacturing the 57 Chevy. They're remanufacturing the Camaros and the Corvette, or not Corvettes, the Camaros and the Mustangs. You know, you can just, or even like the Brookville bodies. Man, I had to stop the recording there because it drives me crazy. I don't know why I have such a hard time remembering Brookville. And I absolutely love them. I've seen them, Jesus, I don't know how many times at Grand National Roadster Show. And I always stop by their booth, and I actually go to their website pretty regularly just to look at the, you know, the 32 Ford Roadster pickup body is my hands down favorite. If I was going to build a hot rod, that's for sure what it would be. Anyway, I think the body in white is a cool idea, and I think it's neat that Dodge is offering it, and I'm sure there's going to be a bunch of guys that squirrel a couple away. It'd be interesting if you wanted to run the math, like I said, on like going to different junkyards and like piecing them together, or like buying a wrecked Hellcat or wide body or whatever one that you like, you know, and kind of piecing those parts in. It'd be interesting to see if that would make sense cost-wise, but for a guy that, you know, may not be able to afford, you know, almost $100,000 for the big ass Hellcats and the demons that are out there, piecing one together might not be a bad way to go. So I think that was kind of a sleeper announcement that some people aren't paying attention to, that was, in my mind at least, kind of cool. The next thing that they announced was Dodge's collaboration with Speed Corps, which I think is long overdue. If you haven't had the opportunity to see one of these Speed Corps, if you haven't had a chance to see one of these Speed Corps builds in person, you are absolutely missing out. The attention to detail, the fit and finish, the weave on the carbon, like they're legit badass. I thought they were going to be gimmicky, and you know, I was really not having, I just didn't have high hopes for them. I mean, anytime you see, especially a new, what is a relative, at the time when I first saw it, a relatively new company enters into production of anything at all, there's a teething process, and that's certainly to be expected. But I gotta say, from the very first products I've seen come out of Speed Corps, I've been pretty impressed. Their carbon work is great, and the show cars that I've seen coming out of them and have been fantastic. I think the last one I saw was one of Kevin Hart's, and it was top notch. It was really, really cool. I was surprised in the video when they showed it they showed the full body, and it looked to be on a rolling chassis, although it, you know, obviously you can't see the suspension, and they certainly didn't pop the hood. But when they showed the interior, it seemed like the carbon body came down into a steel pan. And I'd be really interested to see, or to get a better understanding of what that structure looks like. It makes sense for that they would sell it that way, you know, because it allows you to build your own floor. You're obviously, you know, figure out what you're going to do for your trans tunnel. You know, it absolutely makes sense. If you're building a car to that level of that caliber, it makes sense that they wouldn't put a floor in it. But it does make me question the mounting points for the front and rear suspension, what the structural rigidity of it is. I'm sure obviously you put the floor in, you build the rigidity into it. But if you buy it as a roller and it's missing that entire, you know, firewall back section, I'm hoping that it doesn't flop, you know, or move around. It'd be interesting to talk to somebody that builds one, like what their challenges were in getting that dialed in. Obviously, I didn't come across any pricing announcements yet for the Speed Corps body, but I'm obviously interested. I mean, again, not in my price range at all, and I've got far too many other projects I have to complete already. But if I had no other projects, it's definitely something I'll be looking at. You know, if for nothing else, just curiosity's sake. So that was the Speed Corps announcement, which was absolutely one of my favorite announcements of the day one. The next part is the Challenger convertible, and I absolutely love it. I know it's been long overdue. I know that it's been, you know, something that it's already been done. So guys have been building, the different companies have been building the Challenger convertibles already, and Dodge, yes, is outsourcing this one. So it sounds like, from the little research I was able to do, it's going to add like 8 to 10 weeks on to the body. So you go into your Dodge dealer, you order the car that you want. You have to wait for that to be built if it's not, you know, readily available. And then you, make the arrangements at that time. So when the car becomes available, then it's another 8 to 10 weeks. It goes to Florida, and that's, what is the name of that? I think it was, yeah. So it's Drop Top Customs out of Florida. So obviously anything that comes out of Florida is concerning for obvious reasons. But it sounds like this company's been around for a long time. They've been doing these conversions for a while. I've seen a couple in person already. Not the one they just announced, obviously, but I've seen past ones that they've built already, and I thought they were pretty cool. There were some fit and finish that I was not super stoked on. I think the ones I saw were pretty early in the game, and I don't know if they were all by drop top, but one I saw had a plastic hardcover, like the Camaros did, where it's like a kind of a sectioned plastic contraption that clips down over the stowed convertible top. The other one I saw had the more traditional material top cover, and that neither of them seemed to fit particularly well. It looks like Drop Top is partnering with Roush to do their rigidity testing, and Roush, they've been around for a long time. They build actual race cars, so I mean, hopefully they're legit in regards to how they'll fare over time. Although I did find it interesting when I was reading through the info on the website that the Roush testing, they don't say that it is the same rigidity as the standard production hardtop. Well, not hardtop, but you know what I mean, the hard roof car. But they say that it match. I think I can't remember the exact verbiage, but it was something to the effect of in alignment with a rigidity that you can achieve that other third party convertible manufacturers have been able to achieve with their conversions, which I mean, what is that even? I don't know what that means, but it did sound like kind of a janky way of saying we're pretty good. Not factory OEM good, but we're pretty good. So I'd be interesting to talk to somebody that's got one. And I mean, if the opportunity presented itself in the future, I'd certainly take it. The next thing that they announced on day one was the Hellcat Durango, which I'm stoked for. I like the Durango. I know it's been around forever, like most of Dodge's product line, but my mom's got an SRT8 Cherokee, which I didn't think I would love. And I gotta be honest, that vehicle has completely changed my attitude and towards Jeep as a brand in general. Just a kind of a quick aside, we had a death in a family, and I had to take my mom, she's older and not super confident driving, not comfortable, I should say, driving at night. So we ended up having to take a trip up to Washington for a funeral. And of course it was during the winter season, and we ended up being one of the last cars they let through to go over the pass because of snowstorm coming in. And of course, here I am, got my kids, got my whole family, got my mom in the Jeep with me going up to this funeral. And a blizzard starts coming in, and we're on Pirelli P0s, which is, I don't know if you're tire people or a tire guy or girl, but not known for their winter driving capability. But as soon as the snow started coming down and we were basically all by ourselves going over the pass, I kind of reached down and saw, I remembered, oh yeah, this is a Jeep. I've got, different modes I can select, and one of them is snow. So I slid it over to snow, and it literally changed the entire driving performance of the vehicle. It went from being sketchy and frankly on getting to be scary, because we at that point we're going through 3 to 4, maybe 5 inches of fresh powder, and there was packed snow underneath. They hadn't been running plows yet, and we were, as we were going through the length of the pass, man, I switched over to snow mode, and it, man, it's a Jeep. It did the job. We got through, and at one point, a cop even tried to come out and get us. They saw, I'm the only guy on the freeway. The lights came on, and he started, talking through the loudspeaker, not that I could tell what he was saying. But when I went past him, he tried to come after us on the freeway, and he just looped it, did three big spins and ended up in a ditch, and I didn't even slow down. So that one trip alone made a believer out of me. I wouldn't say go so far as to call myself a Jeep guy, but I never was really a Dodge guy either. But just that one drive turned my entire impression around. I was so impressed by the way that, you know, it went from being, you know, the kind of powerful, you know, a short wheelbase SUV and to being off-road capable on Pirelli P, well, on road, but you know what I mean, like through snow capable on Pirelli P0s. That was crazy impressive. So anyway, the Durango is basically the same formula as the Cherokee SRT, but bigger. It's a longer wheelbase and it has the same drivetrain, you know, with some, you know, notable differences, I'm sure. And they did a limited run of the Hellcat previously. Dodge is on it, has announced that 2023 is going to be the last year of the Hemi. So it makes sense, you know, do a goodbye tour, you know, a farewell run of the Hellcat powered Durangos. And, you know, again, that's another vehicle. Had I the cheddar and the space, I'd definitely jump on one. It's more room than the Jeep. They're more comfortable, in my opinion, than the Jeep, but I'm a bigger dude. So, you know, anytime I can get more room, I'm going to take it. So if I had to pull the trigger on one or the other, I would for sure lean towards the Durango. So that was kind of a cool announcement. And that was pretty much the end of day one. Day two, I heard a lot of guys talking shit about day two. And I got to say, I'm not one of them. I think this is a good move for Dodge. So Dodge announced the Hornet, which I haven't definitely confirmed, but by just looking at the roof line and the window line, it looks to be a Dodge version of the Alpha. And I know I'm going to say this wrong and guys are going to probably make fun of me for it, but that's okay. The Tenal or Stelvia, again, I know I'm saying it wrong, but whatever. So it's based, yeah, Tenale. I'm not going to try and be fancy. Who gives a shit? Let the Italians fight over that shit. But as much as I've seen guys talking shit about the Hornet announcement, Tim came out on day three and said they got 14,000 orders overnight, which... it's not a huge number. I mean, it's certainly not Tesla fanboy numbers, but it's numbers. You know, people are obviously interested. And I think if you're somebody that is looking for, you know, the smaller or mid-size SUV, I think Tim really hit the nail on the head with his description of, you know, of why I'm not drawn to that particular segment. I mean, the cars are fucking boring. They are they're refrigerators. You don't generally buy a refrigerator for style. You buy it to do the job you need it to do. You know, obviously you make choices even in refrigerators. Do you want a white one? Do you want a black one? Do you want stainless? But if you walk through a parking lot, it's going to be full of these small SUVs, and like refrigerators, it's gray, white, or black. There's not a lot of excitement. There's not a lot of, you know, companies that are even doing performance adjacent models. Obviously, Audi is an exception to that. They have an S-line version of their little SUV, and even Volkswagen, they have their R or like sport line. But I mean, with a Volkswagen, that's, at least as far as I can tell, there's not a whole lot of performance improvement there. I think it's mostly like an appearance package. The Audi, they do put the bigger motor in, so there's, you know, there's something there. And Dodge is pulling a Pontiac here, which I guess I can't even, maybe I shouldn't even say that. I mean, Pontiac obvious, I think is an obvious comparison here. You know, they took the, you know, the kind of the boring GM and Buick and Oldsmobile, you know, versions of vehicles and put a body kit on them, and in some cases, you know, more performance under the hood. And it was basically polishing the turd as best as they could, you know, for the majority of Pontiac's later front wheel drive, you know, years. And that seems to be the mode that Dodge is in, which I don't think is a bad thing. I like Pontiacs, and I like Dodges actually more now than I did, you know, when I was younger. The, you know, the Chrysler 300, the Challengers, the Chargers, the Magnums, those were all based on, you know, back in the Daimler Mercedes days, it was based on that product. They took that and ran with it, and I think have done remarkable things with that platform. And it seems like that's what they're doing with the Hornet. They're taking this Stelvia or Tenal SUV, you know, they're putting the body kit on it, they're playing with the power, they're putting some attitude on it and making it their own. And I think that's kind of cool. I'm sure it's going to sell. I think it'll be a great product for them. And I mean, I don't know that it will be what Iacocca's, you know, K cars and minivan was for Dodge, but maybe it will. I mean, people like that segment. They're selling a shitload of them. Everybody else is. So I don't know why Dodge shouldn't jump in on it too. And it seems like this will also be their first kind of entry into the like hybrid EV stuff. I did think it was cool that they brought back the GLH brand, and I think the Hornet makes a lot of sense to put it on that. I mean, the original GLH or Goes Like Hell was the, I think, Plymouth Horizon, which, I mean, if you see one, you would be totally forgiven for walking straight past it. I mean, they were boxy, but not in a cool, like, Volkswagen Golf sort of way. They were, I mean, if a car could have a pocket protector, the Plymouth Horizon would be that car. They're a weird, nerdy, dorky, and not in a favorable way looking vehicle to begin with. I don't know why Shelby got involved with it. I mean, it's kind of cool that he did. From what I understand, they were pretty amazing performance-wise for the day. And I've heard different guys say that they were kind of a light bulb moment for Mitsubishi, who I believe provided those motors. I could be wrong. And I've heard that that was their, partly their impetus for, other than rally racing, you know, kind of pursuing more performance vehicles, which, I mean, if that's the truth, that's cool. So, I mean, at least we got that out of it. I think he said they start with a Hornet GT, then they go to a Hornet RT Hybrid, which, you know, ups the power and adds the electric. And then the Hornet GLH, which is basically all of the, seems like it's going to be all of the RT Hybrid Plus. Oscar did a fantastic rendering, which I posted already. It's a wide body version of that, which, if Dodge doesn't adopt it, boy, are they missing out. Just the addition of the wide body, just like it did for the Challenger and the Charger, it really makes that vehicle. And I think Oscar at Abimelech Design did an amazing job with the rendering. I couldn't believe how fast he got it out. So check out Abimelech Design. And I did a previous podcast with him. Super cool guy, which I'd also absolutely be stoked to talk to again. Day three is the big day for Dodge's announcements. The last day, I watched it, and, you know, when it came out, and I've been sitting on a little bit, kind of reading people's comments and thinking about it, because I got to be honest, my knee-jerk reaction was shocked at how good-looking the vehicle is. I do like the way it looks. I'm glad that they didn't go with a typical Jelly Bean. I'm glad that Dodge is doing Dodge, which, you know, of course, it makes sense. And I said I was going to circle back to it when I started this section of the podcast, and this is where I'm going to do it. I really think, on looking back through his resume, that Tim is the guy to run this conversion. I really think that he's going to be, I think history's going to look back on Kaniski's running this transition very favorably, especially when you consider, you know, he ran the Jeep brand. He's worked with Alpha. He's come back to Dodge. And the reason why I keep harping on the Jeep brand is, if you're not a Jeep guy, I mean, you may not, this may not even be on your radar, but one of the things that keep the Jeep folks coming back, other than, you know, the name itself, especially in the modern times, is that they've really kind of pioneered the Easter egg in vehicles. And if you're not familiar with that term, Easter eggs is just like a hidden feature or hidden icon, or like just little things that they hide throughout the vehicle, that to take the explanation from Steve Jobs, it's the surprise and delight, you know. So you're putting groceries in your Jeep, and then you notice, like, in the black part of the paint trim around the window, there's like a little image of a guy in a Jeep driving upside down, like falling out, holding onto the steering wheel. You know, it's just like in the paint, you know, it's just something that they put in there. Or you're, you know, opening a door, you're opening a glove box, you're opening the rear hatch, and there's little Jeep icons. There's little kind of animation style, like, you know, images, or, you know, little things that they hide, you know, throughout the car, that you're probably not going to notice the 10th or 100th time, you know, that you're at that, in that area of your vehicle, goofing around or doing whatever you're doing. But you're going to come across these like little details, and you're like, oh shit, I didn't even notice that before. You know, it's like, it's kind of a way to keep interest. It renews interest in the vehicle as you own it. Any Jeep guy I've talked to, like, every time they discover another one of these Easter eggs, and from what I understand, they do switch it up quite a bit throughout even the same production year. You know, they're always stoked about it. You know, just, it's one of those dumb little details that doesn't cost them really probably anything to put in there, but it gives the car added value, and it draws a harder connection between the person and the machine. You know, it more personality, basically. And so that's why I think Tim is really a great guy to spearhead this transition. The electric car, you know, that whole segment has been, I don't think there's anybody that would deny, pioneered by Elon and Tesla. And if you go on any Tesla, you know, any of their groups, you know, any of their message boards, anything where there's like more than three Tesla guys, maybe not the first thing, but within the top five, you're going to see those guys talking about like the software updates and the little things that Tesla's pushing out, like the dance thing that the big SUV does. They did that, I think, around Christmas. Or there was the big screen, you can turn it into like, it looks like a fireplace with like the log burning, which I thought was pretty funny given the battery fires that they were having around that time. But they're like little dumb features. And I think while there's going to be guys that talk shit about that or make fun of it, I think even those guys deep down really like them. I know I do. So again, I think Tim's a great guy to lead this transition. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of little Easter eggs hidden throughout the new car. I did think it was funny when they said the name. I was like, are they trying to like buddy up to their like budding Mexican population or something? Because the car's got like 35 names or whatever. I think the full name was the geez, I don't want to get this wrong. So it was the Charger Daytona SRT Banshee. So, I mean, do with that what you will. I thought it was funny. Anyway, so there's that. And then, let's see. There were quite a few things that I thought were interesting. I don't know how far into this I want to go, because I'm really trying to think of a way that I can position it and not sound like a total nutbag But I guess we'll see how it goes. But I haven't seen too many other people talking about this, but it really did sound like Dodge might be going the way of BMW's like pay to play announcement in regards to, you know, Dodge building the vehicle, you buy the vehicle, and then they're going to sell, like, it sounded like over-the-air unlocks of features that the car technically shipped with or could be attained through the hardware you already have existing. So what I'm talking about, it's in this podcast already. I believe I'm including my, like, how I felt about BMW selling access to things like the heated seats on a monthly or like an app style subscription basis. And in the announcement, Tim was saying that through their direct connection, which is Dodge's, that's what Dodge is calling their like performance division, I guess, the options division now, that they were going to offer 3 power levels when you buy it. And then through the direct connection, there was going to be 9 additional power levels. And they included the power shot push to pass. It sounded like that was going to be part of the, like, as it comes when you initially buy it. But then there's going to be a slam mode, a drift mode, a drag mode, and a donut mode. And it sounded like those were, when he announced it, it sounded like he was saying that they were going to be available as an additional cost through direct connection, which, it's an electric goddamn car. You know, they're not selling you a cold air intake. They're not selling you, you know, body kits. They're not selling you interior enhancements. These are basically software changes to the car that gives it functionality it technically could have done as purchased. So it'll be interesting to see how they roll that out. You know, what the costs are. Is it going to be a month-to-month thing, or is it going to be you bought it and now that car has it? So I don't know. This is part of what I keep alluding to that I don't technically want to get into right now. But I don't like this. I don't like this. I'm not a fan. If that's what Dodge is doing, then I'm not here for it. I don't like the idea of buying a vehicle that has hardware on it that I can't access without paying an additional fee to. I understand why the manufacturers are doing it. You know, every phone in every person's pocket has apps, and people pay extra for apps. And I'm seeing some real parallels between the automotive industry and the cellular industry that I'm very concerned with, and I think do not bode well for us going forward as enthusiasts, or just even if you're somebody that sees a car as an appliance, you know, just an A to B thing that you don't really care about. I am deeply concerned about this trend that I'm seeing develop, you know, with the different automotive manufacturers as they make the switch from internal combustion to a very, very connected electronic car. But I don't know. Maybe I'll go into that in more depth in a different podcast. At the beginning of day 3 announcement, I'm a Archer fan, so it was kind of funny to see them put that like really quick in the intro to that. The R-Wing, I'm cool with it. So I saw a lot of people talking shit about it, but just basically, like the Ferrari, there's the kind of negative space between the hood and a panel that runs across the front of the vehicle. And Dodge is calling this the R-Wing. So basically the air goes through the grill and then it goes up the hood, creating downforce. At least that's what Ferrari uses it for. It sounded like it was mostly an aesthetic thing on Dodge. And like Tim said, I don't care. I think it's cool. I think it looks cool. It'll be interesting to see what, if any, performance it improves, or it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure somebody will run the numbers to see, like, the positive or negative effect of it. But I think it's a fantastic looking vehicle. I think the name is a little long, as I mentioned, but you know, whatever. I don't think there's any brand out there right now that doesn't have a vehicle that somebody doesn't like one of the product names. I think it's an interesting transition. I think it's a transition Dodge had to make. I don't know how many countries another Hellcat would have been allowed in. There are certain cities throughout Europe that are already, you know, talking about at least banning internal combustion engines. And if they're doing it in Europe, they're, you know, I'm sure California is going to figure out a way to do it next. Let's see. I did think the rear hatch was interesting. They did show it kind of, I don't remember if they showed it in the video or if I came across it next, in that it looks like the rear seats lay down and it kind of gives you a ute feel or a kind of a utility vehicle feel with all the seats laid down. Obviously, it looks like they're doing a skateboard model, you know, with batteries in the, where the chassis would be, and then, you know, electric motors for the front and the back. He did say it was all-wheel drive, but they didn't say if this is like a electric motor per wheel type thing, or if this is a electric axle, you know, where the motor's in the middle and then independent suspension going out. I did like the e-rupt thing sounded cool. I do work in the tech industry. I do have a lot of buddies that have Teslas, so I am very familiar with that group. And the linear pull of a Tesla, the like basically one gear, it's cool, no question, and they are wicked fast. But I think the e-rupt thing is a good move for Dodge. I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, I am a guy that likes the pull as he goes through the gears, like he said. I'm sure that it's just, you know, programming, and I'm sure they'll give you a way to adjust it. But I thought that was kind of a cool addition. It's a interesting, you know, Dodgeification of the electric vehicle. And I think that it probably will be something that other companies adopt as well. Another thing I thought was cool about the concept, at least, I did mention I thought it was great looking. We already talked about the rear hatch. I think I mentioned it was all-wheel drive. But, it's getting a lot of hate, and that's understandable. The car community is an internal combustion community, by and large. But I think Tim Kuniskis hit it on the head when he said if Dodge ignored that fact, they'd be doing a 9-second pass straight to extinction. I just can't see the argument against that logic. I mean, let's be real. It seems like not just the American government, but, you know, other countries as well are really pushing to force automotive manufacturers to stop making internal combustion. It doesn't seem like any country that I've seen, other than, you know, maybe the Netherlands or the Swedes, are making moves to build an infrastructure to support them at all, which I think is crazy. I don't know. I don't know how all that shit's going to shake out, but it does seem to be the way we're going. And I think I think this car might not be a bad way for Dodge to get it pursued. Again, I'm not super stoked on the end of the Hemi, but I think it's inevitable. And I think that Dodge getting out ahead of it and trying to do something cool is a neat move. Oh shit, I didn't even talk about the damn exhaust. Oh, I can't believe I forgot to talk about that. All right. Let me stop wrapping this up. Let me go back. So this was something probably the thing I heard the most people talking shit about, and I absolutely understand why. The second I heard it, I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. And then they do like a really short kind of parade lap, you know, they go out of like the announcement room out into like an outdoor area and then back around. And they were calling it the Fratzog Chambered Exhaust. And they were saying that it is going to be as loud as 126 decibels, which he said was louder than the supercharged, you know, V8s that they're making. It is certainly an acquired taste. Porsche's already doing this with their electric, turbo, whatever. I like the sound that the Porsche makes. I think it's interesting. I have absolutely almost been run over by Teslas more times than I would like to admit. They are super quiet. They make absolutely no noise in a goddamn parking lot. And if the shithead behind the wheel is drinking his latte or texting his side piece, they're going to run your ass down. They're too quiet. It doesn't make sense that this isn't addressed, you know. So again, Porsche's already doing it. Was not surprised that Dodge did it, you know, especially with Dodge's philosophy of being Dodge. And I can't believe that there won't be choices, you know. Like it would be shocking to me that they don't have variations or like, you know, the ability to change the sound level or, you know, to turn it off completely. They probably won't let you turn it off completely. That it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. But I didn't mind like I have a pretty decent sound on my computer. So when I was listening to it, I got the bass of it. And I think that makes a lot of sense because it was they had a really interesting kind of ominous low bassy tone. And then there was kind of the pitchy revy tone that seemed to be layered on top of it. And I'm not going to say I'm a fan. I didn't like the pitchy revy thing. It's like when you see a guy walks into a bar and he's got a big fake diamond in his ear, you know, that whole, I don't know. I'm not down for the fakery. I'm not down for the bullshit, but an electric vehicle making a sound, especially when you're driving at parking lot speeds, it just makes sense. And I think the low ominous bassy tone was kind of cool. And if it just made that tone to say like 35, 40, that makes sense to me. You know, it's enough to draw somebody's attention. I don't know that I need the pitchy revy sounds, especially when they showed it like going at a consistent speed. You know, it was almost like he had it in neutral and was, you know, zapping the throttle as he would, but the car was doing such a consistent speed. I have to think that at least in the concept, those two things are not connected. So I don't know that I definitely understand why guys are talking a lot of shit about it. That makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure that I'm a super fan myself, but I think a sound has to be there. So anyway, I am going to wrap it up now. That was like all 3 days covered more or less. I don't know. I'm not going to run out and buy a Dodge. I'm certainly not in a position to order one of the last Hemi cars, much to my dismay. I could definitely see doing it. I'm sure a lot of guys will. I'm sure a lot of guys are going to squirrel these things away. Like, I can't believe I'm still finding, you know, an occasional 96 Impala SS with under 30,000 miles on it. So Dodge guys are pretty well known for doing that kind of shit. I still find Magnums with under 50,000 miles on them, and they'll have like 3 or 4 or 6 owners. So I get it. You know, these cars are going to be around. Like, even if you can't run out and order the exact one you want, it's not like there's a billion options. You know, chances are somebody's going to order the one you want. You'll probably be able to find it with relatively low miles in the future. And I don't know, if the government gets their way, who knows how easy it's going to be to drive these vehicles, you know, in the future, like when our kids inherit them, you know, are they going to just take up space in the garage and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's dad's old shit that I can't even drive anymore. Or are they going to make concessions? You know, it's who knows? Who knows what the future brings? But I think this is a good move for Dodge. I think all the announcements were on point. I didn't see anything that I thought was a huge miss. Lots of really cool stuff for the enthusiast. Again, the SpeedCore announcement I thought was kind of overdue. I'm not surprised Dodge is the one to jump on them. It makes perfect sense. Looking at what they've done in the past. So that I thought was really great. The body in white and the drag cars were interesting. The convertible, long overdue, not really groundbreaking, as it was something you could have already been doing. The company already exists. That, you know, Drop Top Conversions has been out there doing this already for a while. Kind of streamlining the process of getting one was interesting. I'm not sure why it took them so long to do that. So yeah, cool stuff. Hope you guys thought so too. Hopefully this wasn't super boring for you guys. Again, this is going to be one of the clips I'm including in my first solo podcast that I am attempting. So I'm still trying to figure this out. You guys asked for it, so I'm doing it. Hopefully you guys like it. Let me know. You can always get me on my Facebook, The Lowered. You can get me on my Instagram, The Lowered HMFIC. I have a Twitter that I very rarely, if ever, use. But I do go on there from time to time. And then, of course, I have my website. So you can hit me up. Facebook's probably the easiest for most guys. And I do respond to pretty much every post that guys do. So, yeah, be interesting to hear what you guys think. Hope you enjoyed it.